This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly sponsored by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. As a City supporter, we know you value delivery, and McDelivery is up there with the very best. You'll always be winning with McDelivery because just like Kevin De Bruyne, McDelivery puts your order right on a plate. So the only thing left to say is, are you in? Order now on the McDonald's app and you can also get rewards points delivered as well. So that ordering today means some tasty rewards for you tomorrow. Only via the app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. What did we make of the City documentary, 2011-12, The Centurions or the Treble Winners? And do City need a set 11 this year? It's episode 2 of City Report Podcast's Coffee Corner. I'm Amos Murphy.
I'm Adam Booker.
I'm Bailey Wynn.
And this is the City Report Podcast.
It's here for good to win! It is a thrilling start for Manchester City. The fastest ever goal in an FA Cup final. 2023 is the City treble year. Champions of England, FA Cup winners, and now, at last, champions of Europe. Manchester City are kings of Europe. Now they have their triple crown.
Welcome back to the second edition of our brand new Coffee Corner, the place where we answer your listener questions. Grab a drink and we'll get straight into it. Bailey, welcome back. Second appearance. You much of a coffee drinker? I asked this question last time and one of the contributors said no. And the other one said, well, I've got a glass of wine in my hand. So maybe we'll up the caffeine levels this time around.
For me, it's probably a cup of espresso every now and again, but not like a regular kind of drinker like others.
Adam, I know your answer. Coffee fiend, although not anymore. You had to down that coffee intake.
Yeah, I've started the coffee again after winning a battle with stomach ulcer. The ulcer has been defeated, and I'm back to recreating a new one with Guinness and coffee once again.
Yeah, sounds like a wonderful combination, although not together. Although you do, there was... I don't know if it was only a fad, a limited edition, but Guinness released a coffee-surged can of Guinness. A couple.
I don't think that made it over here.
For good reason. It shouldn't have made it over here either.
We already have Four Loko. We don't need Guinness and coffee-infused Guinness.
I'll leave that to my imagination. Thankfully, I think I don't know what that is. Anyway, we'll get straight into it. Coffee Corner, listener questions. The first question comes from Damien, who simply puts, asks us what we thought of the new City documentary. Now, I assume the panel has seen at least some of it. In fact, I know the panel has seen at least some of it. I finished it off today. Listeners, I imagine you'll be, some of you will be hoping to have no spoilers. So we'll try our best, but I guess we'll probably maybe spoil one or two things. So if you want to, I'm sure producer Adam, who is a completely separate entity to co-host Adam, will be putting some timestamps in the description and you can skip to the next part of, you know, you can listen through. It depends. It's up to you. But Bailey, I'll start with you. Six-part documentary tracking City's treble victory from last year. I thought on the whole it was great, but I'd be interested to hear what you thought.
Yeah, I'd agree on the whole, great. I think if you look at, say, like the Amazon one, you probably got a little bit more insights, a little bit more behind the scenes compared to this one. And you think with Pep, there's probably a lot of tactical stuff that he doesn't want involved. And then with the club, you've got a specific angle that you want to be able to produce putting it in that market out to Netflix. But again, really love the details. There's one bit in the final episode where Pep goes to incredible lengths to make sure the entire squad feels part of that 11 that's on the pitch, that everybody has a role, that everybody's behind it. And I think that just shows you like all the little details that Pep has to think of, how this culture really matters. And that would be my one takeaway, is how good this team environment is that last season.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think I was finding myself laughing along and at times almost in tears at some of the sort of the players' revelations and the behaviours. And, you know, it looked like, didn't it, Adam? It looked like a great team to be part of. I know you had some minor criticisms, let's say, of the documentary, which I'll give you the floor in a second. But I think it depends how you look at it. I'd have personally loved it to have been a bit more personal, maybe on the fan side. I think I'm right in saying bar Erling Haaland, Sergio Gomez, Phil Foden, and Nedim Manuha, we don't actually hear from any fans. And obviously they're not there to say the fan story. But other than that, you know, it's well put together. It's wonderfully done. And yeah, it was nice to relive it.
Yeah, I think my issue was the expectations I had set when Netflix took over and there was this big, long delay over the release. Had it just been a City Studios thing, I don't think I would have been underwhelmed, because it's, as you pointed out to me, it's just a continuation of the Together documentary. I think they did when City won the domestic treble, and we got, you know, to see the insights of Vincent Kompany's, you know, speech in the
21-22 as well, which I think even the branding is like, and the music is the same.
Yeah. But I had thought, Maybe like you, that when Netflix took it over, I thought we'd get a bit more of the Netflix vibe, which we've seen from other football documentaries done by Netflix, and we would see more from the fans' point of view and, you know, follow the players home and learn more about their family and home life and stuff. But it was just kind of game footage and dressing room footage. But that stuff is still enjoyable and valuable, and it was great to see some of the, you know, halftime speeches by players like Rodri and Ruben Diaz and all that kind of stuff. So other than the whole night that I spent complaining in very vulgar fashion, I can't complain about it.
Yeah, fair enough. Bailey, look, I think Adam's right in the sense that when you have the Netflix sort of label on it, your expectations go up a bit. And I think just sort of looking at the timescale, Netflix was announced. There were some rumours, I think, going back into last year and just sort of after City completed it. But we all knew this documentary was coming. And obviously the clamour was, when is it going to be? It'd gone sort of radio silence. But the timescale probably points towards more that they just basically stuck their name on it and maybe did a few sort of dubbings in different languages and the production, the distribution as opposed to the production. But do you think maybe that they could have pulled the finger out a little bit more and had a few more, you know, segments? It's hard, isn't it? Because it was obviously filmed by City, so it's down to what they had. But in terms of the interviews they put in afterwards, would you have preferred to see more? Or do you think it was absolutely perfect the way they framed it and the way they did it as it was?
I think everybody will always ask for more. And the points that Adam has made, that probably comes from the deal being made at the start of the season and then giving a production team the run of the whole season to properly shape that documentary. So everything you're talking with the fans, they would have the months in time preparation to kind of lay out the groundwork for that, do the kind of interviews. The players, the same thing, map out, this is when Phil Foden's going to spend a month with the camera crew and really get behind the scenes. But if this criticism comes out on podcasts amongst the fans, then hopefully then that feedback flows back and then they can have a better idea going into that next time they do it.
Yeah, I guess that sort of stuff is wholly dependent on City being successful, because for my money, one of the best sports documentaries, not even just football, is Sunderland Till I Die, and they obviously track the stories of the fans from sort of the first minute. But you kind of know what you're going to get with Sunderland, that they're going to be this middling to, well, at times unsuccessful club, and the heartbreak, and if they're not, they're going to be this successful club and they're going to get promoted. I don't think it would have made great television, would it, Adam, if City had just kind of limped to a Premier League title and got knocked out of the Champions League and in the quarterfinals, you know, etc, etc. As it goes, they didn't, and it would have been wonderful, but that's the risk they take. And other than that, though, one thing I wanted to pick up on was Pep Guardiola, because we I anyway think we saw a new side to him. I know Bailey referenced the Amazon documentary, but it feels like his personality and his persona has changed. And in one of the episodes, he even referenced that. He looked like he as intense as sort of the reports from players and the rooms and stuff had pointed towards. It looked like it'd be, first of all, a hell of a fun time to work under him, but a physically and mentally draining one as well.
Yeah, we did see a bit more personality from him. I feel like in the first the Amazon documentary, because it was still his time at the club was still new. It was more about like getting to know the genius and the tactical side and the motivational side and all of that. But I think this whole documentary starts out with him in training doing the Bernardiki thing and just
that was
like
that was a good accent.
Oh yeah, yeah. I look in the mirror and pretend to be Pep like once or twice a day, so I've got it down. But no, it was good. And I think he's way more emotionally invested in the club this time around than he was in year two. You know, I think he feels what fans feel a bit more. And you saw that after the Southampton loss, which that scene has now gone very viral, in which he said, you know, the fans can barely pay their heating bill and they're traveling up and down the country to still watch you, and this is what you give them. He has no obligation to even think about the fans. He can just moan about the tactics and the effort and blah, 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 blah. But, you know, I think he's way more emotionally invested in being the manager of this club, and I think he feels it's his club now. And that whole side of it was really admirable, and that was probably the most enjoyable part for me.
It's all for the cameras, though.
Exactly.
As we know famously, it's just for his ego. We will move on and speak about some more questions in a moment, Bailey, but I just wanted to sort of finally touch on the implications this has going forward, because look, everyone would have lapped up it had it been released on City TV or whatever it's called nowadays, and you know, we'd have all watched it, but it had probably stopped at the fan base. Whereas this, I had messages off an uncle who, for all intents and purposes, couldn't care less about football. In fact, you know, we joke whenever we see each other, like, you know, are you into football yet? And like, no, not at all. He basically doesn't care for it at all. But I got a message off him, oh, look what's new on Netflix, et cetera, et cetera. And as you sort of look at this growing city and these negatives and these plus points, I think Alex Michelle said this earlier on in the week, but it's, I don't know. It may not turn out to be the case, but I feel like it could be seismic for the club.
Yeah, I think it's no surprise that it's being released at this time that we're seeing figures about the US viewership increasing and the popularity of City over there. Drive to Survive is another one. And I think what you mentioned about having family members interested is this gives you a way to kind of open the door to City to new people, but make it quite easily accessible. So you're saying, chuck on 30, 40 minutes episode, watch this with me, get a little bit of a flavour of what it's like behind the scenes, what the team's like, what the player's like, without having to commit to having to watch a game. Similar to the Drive to Survive, you get the flavour of the drivers, you understand their personality, and that gives you a little bit more buy-in. Like you said, I think this is at a time where you're going to see the growth in different markets, and City are the dominant team at that time.
Is Pep more like Toto Wolff or Christine Horner?
Probably Horner, I'd say, because...
Really? Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I wouldn't have Pep down as somebody who's interested in the business side, so...
true. Final question, Adam. Out of five stars, City's documentary on Netflix, what are you giving it?
3.5.
Oof. Bailey?
I was leaning towards a 4, but I'd probably go like 3.8. I think there's still a good amount of room for improvement in that.
I'm going to give it a 4. It was wonderful.
It's just sliding expectations. If it was a purely City Studios thing, I would have given it a 5. But the fact that they delayed it for so long, Netflix played, what, £10 million for it or something like that. I just thought there'd
that's
be
good
a
deal from
a
City, though,
more.
Isn't it?
No, I'm not. Listen, I'm not complaining. This is our Felipe Coutinho. But I just expected a bit more substance to it than just game montage, dressing room clip, game montage, dressing room clip, and so on and so forth. But all of that stuff was still enjoyable.
We got to see Jack Grealish's dog. What more could you want, man?
That's
what more could you want?
And he doesn't know he's Jack Grealish's dog.
He doesn't, famously. Okay, that'll do there, listeners. If you've stuck with us and you haven't watched it yet, this isn't sponsored, but truly, go off and do it. I think it's worth the time anyway. But that'll do for part one. In part two, we've got a couple more questions to get to, so stay exactly where you are.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The Etihad Stadium really is wonderful at this time of the season, and the same goes for McDelivery. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Welcome back to the City Report podcast, another episode of the Coffee Corner. If you want your question featured, make sure to hit us up, City Report Pod on social media. You can DM us, you can email us, whatever you want. We will try and get it answered. Moving on from that one then, obviously City's treble is one of many major achievements for City, but they've had quite a few great teams. And this is a bit of a funky fun question. It comes from Juan. I need your Spanish pronunciation there, Adam. Juan. I don't know what you call it.
You're giving it a Portuguese word. Twang by giving it the Juan.
Juan.
That would be Portuguese, is what I'm saying.
Maybe. I think I prefer Portugal anyway. We'll see. But yeah, anyway, that person.
You heard that, Juan. Don't ever write in again unless you're from Portugal.
Hey, are you assuming their nationality?
That's true.
They could be Portuguese. Okay. The actual important question. They've asked us, and Bailey, I'll throw this to you first. You have the 2012 team, the Centurions, and the treble team. You have to make a full starting 11 using the defensive one, the midfield of another, and the attack of another. Keeper is a free-for-all, so we'll go into 10 outfield players. You can pick the best goalkeeper. What's your team? And that's a really interesting question.
You just remind me of the teams again? So we got Centurions, 2011, 2012, and then the treble winners.
The treble winners, yeah.
Treble winners. I'd probably say defence, treble winners, keeper, Edison. Front three from the Centurions, and then the midfield from the 11-12, because David Silva has to be in that team.
Interesting. What? Just quickly, what Edison is it? 2018 or 2023?
The 18 one, yeah.
Oh, cool. My answer differs slightly. I'll come to it in a second. Adam, what are you going for?
I think I would have gone for exactly what Bailey said, but just for fun, I'll switch it up and I'll say treble defense, Centurions midfield. So Fernandinho, Kevin De Bruyne, David Silva.
Yeah.
And I'll go front three from the, or attack from 2012. So give me, let's see, we've had 4-3-3. So give me Samir Nasri, Aguero, and throw me Carlos Tevez on another wing.
Really?
I'm trying to be different.
Okay, but not even above Erling Haaland, Jack Grealish.
Well, I already have the treble winners defense, right? Well, can I only choose one?
No. So you would be picking the treble winners attack. So is for you the defense the lock?
Yeah.
And you think that provides the best?
I mean, to a man, I'd rather have, other than maybe Vincent Kompany, I'd rather have the treble winning defense. I'd rather have, I'd rather have Kyle Walker than Zabaleta. I'd rather have John Stones over Julian Lescott. Vincent Kompany and Ruben Diaz is a toss-up for me. I'd rather have Nathan Ake over Gael Clichy or Kolarov. So I think it's the lock.
Interesting. Interesting. I think in isolation, that makes total sense because I would agree treble winners' defense is superior to 2011-12 defense. But I think, Bailey, the when you throw up the configurations like that, and obviously you said 2011-12 midfield, which would have been, if we're doing the 4-3-3, what can we give you there? Nigel de Jong, David Silva, and Gareth Barry, maybe? Possibly Yaya Toure, obviously he's got to be in there.
Also, I would like to say for my team, I predict a lot of stalemates, so I'm going to get big Willie Caballero in goal to win us the penalty shootouts.
Penalty shootouts in the Premier League, is that a new introduction? Yeah, you damn Americans.
Like MLS next pro.
But basically the point I'm making, Bailey, is City scored 94 goals in the Premier League last season. They had Erling Haaland, who has obviously had his deficiencies this time around, but let's not forget he was the record-breaking goal scorer for City last year. Was it 52 goals in 53 games? Yes, the treble-winning defence was great, but the treble-winning attack was possibly equally as good.
I think it was probably just incredibly efficient by the time we got to the end of the season. We saw it kind of in moments in the start of that season, explode in one moment and then struggle in others to try and find the right balance. We saw it then really kind of click into gear. And then towards the end of the season, it was kind of everybody was taking a turn in terms of who was showing up at that moment.
Yeah, I think that's you know, it does work out that way. I'm actually going to go 2023 Edison. I'm going to go 2011-12 defence, Centurions midfield. So Fernandinho, Kevin De Bruyne, David Silva, and treble winners attack. And I think my team beats all of yours. I think it works treble winning attack.
Foden, Haaland, Grealish.
Yes.
Bernardo Silva, Haaland, Grealish.
Bernardo Silva, obviously the guy who played the Champions League final, but I think with David Silva in there, you can possibly get away with Phil Foden. So Grealish, Haaland, Foden. I think I win 4-0 every game.
I don't know. Not with Willie Caballero in goal for me.
Yeah, Big Willie. Yeah, standing up tall is Big Willie. Anyway, let's move on before again they come and cancel us. Listeners, let us know which one you would have picked there. 2011-12 team, Centurions, and the treble winning team. You've got to make a starting 11, midfield, attack, and defence. Okay, then final question. And it comes from David. And we can tie this into City's weekend fixture, which is tomorrow by the time of release. In fact, 12:30. So it's coming around quickly against Crystal Palace. They ask us, and again, Bailey, you can start us off this time. Is City's success this season contingent on Pep Guardiola finding a consistent starting 11? And I know last time you were on the show, you did a wonderful sort of deep dive into City's tactical setup so far this season. And I guess one of the themes has been, not that you'd have expected it in the first two thirds of the season, because there's always going to be more rotation than there will be in the final third, but there has been this sense of City and Pep don't know the guys yet. And I guess it full circle with the documentary. We see that, you know, the 14 players who are standing up week on, week out, the winning games, the first names on the team sheet, maybe one or two tweaks here or there, Akanji, Kyle Walker, etc. But you could pretty much pick every starting 11 from the same 14 players. Do you think that's sort of necessary for City this season? Not to have the same success, because that would be ludicrous to expect it, but to win one of the big two trophies?
I don't think it's quite as necessary as last season, in which the lineup was really quite flexible within a game. So what you would have as that starting lineup could kind of adjust depending on the opponent and the game state. Whereas I think this season we've seen in a few different ways, definitely Villa's one. There's different ways this team can play, and depending on the opponent, both in the Premier League, in the Champions League, I think it's definitely kind of dependent on Pep, but on Pep picking the right group of players for the right game rather than finding the right 11 for every game.
Why do you think it was so important last year then obviously City were a bit rocky in the first half of the campaign, so maybe that plays into it, that City had those players. Bailey, again, you can take this question because I know it's your forte, and obviously we'll leave links to all of your work in the description at Sky Blue Times. But it did feel, I totally agree, it felt like City needed that sort of that set 11. Why then, 12 months later, is it the personnel in the squad? Is there not the people there? I said on, I think it was the preview show, that I personally felt Guardiola has a lot of good players, not a lot of great ones, but to use the old adage, pressure makes diamonds. And I guess the last sort of 2 months of the season is where you get the most pressure.
Yeah, I think when you're looking at last season, you had the kind of big figure coming in Haaland, a team that's always played with a false nine and kind of perfected that, trying to learn how to balance that right. You had Guardiola not really ever finding the balance early on what he needed in midfield and defence, with having Haaland in the team. But when I go to this season, I think, like you said, there's a lot of good players rather than great players. It's not necessarily this is the 11 that has to be. But I think there's games where Kovacic can be excellent for us. I think there's games where he's not really as useful. I think Doku's got games where he's going to be incredibly threatening. And there's games where he's not worth having him on the pitch to start, but he's an option off the bench. And I could go through several players in the team doing that same sort of thing. Whereas if you go back to last season, Gundogan has to play as many games as he can. Grealish has to play as many games as he can, and you can go through the team. De Bruyne is another one. But this season, now you've got that question of, does De Bruyne need to play this game? Can he be used better in a different game? Can another player be better used in his position? And so on.
Yeah, that's interesting. Adam, I'm going to ask you this. I've pulled up the squad from the Villa game. And I want you to tell me, these players, if we had a Champions League final tomorrow, not necessarily if you'd want them to start, but if you'd sort of, trust is maybe another sort of maybe too strong a word, but if they were in the starting 11, would you be having a fret over it? So let's quickly blitz through it. Stefan Ortega.
Fine.
Rico Lewis.
No.
No, okay, so that's the first one. I'm going to assume Diaz, Akanji are all good.
Yes.
John Stones as well. Kyle Walker?
Yeah.
Guardiola?
Yes.
I will say, obviously, Walker wasn't in the squad. I'm just chucking in the names there that are injured from the defence. Rodri, Bernardo Silva?
Yes.
Yes, yeah. Foden, Grealish?
Yes.
Alvarez?
Depends on where.
As a striker?
Yeah, I think I'd obviously prefer a different option, one much bigger, yeah. Much manlier option. But
poor Julian. There you go. I got the pronunciation right that time.
He's a small, shy guy like me.
Haaland, Kevin De Bruyne, I assume, is a yes. This is where we're getting into maybe some of the more difficult ones to answer. Mateo Kovacic.
Yeah, I would trust him.
Doku.
No.
You've renegaded on your lovely comments yesterday. Mateus Nunes?
No.
Sergio Gomez, Oscar Bob?
No and no.
What I'm trying to get at there is, do you think there are more players in the squad this year that you would trust in this running than last year? And whether or not it's better to have more players, more in terms of quantity you can rely on, or is it better to have that quality sort of in abundance as opposed to the players in abundance?
I think it's more important to have quality in abundance than quantity of players. And just on the broader question, I don't necessarily think that success hinges on Pep finding a specific 11 players that play the remainder of the games. I think if you look back at all of the successful Pep teams, the hallmark wasn't a specific starting 11, but the hallmark was a very specific identity. Obviously, that identity has evolved in an incredible amount from 2016. You know, we've had the kind of swashbuckling centurions, a bit more controlled domestic treble winners. We've had the false nine era. We've had the treble winning team from last year that was completely different, playing with a big bumbly striker and four center backs. So I am more concerned about this current team finding an identity and finding a system of play that is mirrored from game to game, because I think that is the hallmark of Pep teams. And within that identity, you can swap out the likes of Ake and Gvardiol, or Kyle Walker and Manuel Akanji at right back, or Bernardo Silva and Phil Foden out wide on the right, or Kevin De Bruyne and Phil Foden centrally, and so on and so forth. I think that's the hallmark of the Pep teams, that this team at the moment, not saying it's going to be like this the remainder of the season, but at the moment feels like it's missing.
Bailey, anything to add to that? I do want to turn attention quickly to Crystal Palace. So if you fancy tying that in as well, then maybe that might be useful. But identity is this sort of theme that carried over from last season. It's obviously, you need that evolution. We've seen that many a time before. But whether or not we find it, I think, is one of the biggest questions. And if it is going to be, it has to be on the back of that Villa game where City looked dead fluid. It has to be going into the Palace game, which is going to be a tough test, but, you know, it's one that they need to win.
Yeah, I'd agree with what Adam said about identity. And it's probably why you've seen quite a few games this season where you feel like they don't have an identity. And then you'll see City play with a team that has more players in midfield, more touches on the ball, more 1-2 passes, a lot more rotations, and that's one of the few kind of like similarities you see between all these different teams, and it starts to feel a little bit more comfortable. And on the subject of identity, City are going to play a team at the weekend which are struggling to find their own identity in Crystal Palace under a new manager with a very clear system that he wants to implement, but still going to be an incredibly tough game against the Palace side that don't concede many goals, don't let you have many shots on goal, don't score a lot of goals themselves. And I think it's 4 out of the last 6 games have all been 1-1 that they played in. So that's going to be an incredibly tight game, not exactly free-flowing. And whether we see a different approach, I'm not sure. Obviously, you've got Haaland, you've got De Bruyne out. Is that identity Adam was talking about going to be gone again?
Do you think they both play? Bailey, Haaland, De Bruyne?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
Interesting. Adam?
Yeah, I think they do. And I think Haaland should.
With Madrid coming up as well?
Yeah, and I think Haaland should. We talked on yesterday's episode about in a world without egos and contractual obligations and things like that, that there is a world in which you can pick and choose your games to play Kevin De Bruyne, but I don't think that's going to be the case. I think he's going to start and play every single big game going forward.
Just finally then, Adam, on Palace, I mean, you can cut and paste the conversations we've had for the last, I don't know, even going back to this time last year. It's 3 points or bust, isn't it, really? And look, you know, City might drop a point here or there and they could still win the Premier League title. You're probably not going to get Liverpool winning every game of the season. They might go on and win every game of the season. You're probably not going to get Arsenal doing it, but they might do. You know, the permutations are permutations at this point. But just the way the season's set up for City, they could be going top, they could be in third. I don't know what, it depends on the sort of the different factors at play. But yeah, 3 points or bust, I think, again.
I think so. And I think from the remaining 24, the mentality in the team is probably 24 points or bust. Just considering other than last season and the COVID season when City won the league by 10 or more points, I think it was, they've had to win every game down the stretch or they would have lost multiple titles out to Liverpool. So I think the mentality in the team won't be, it doesn't look like Liverpool, you know, they could drop some points. Arsenal might drop some points. I think the mentality is Liverpool and Arsenal will win all of their remaining games. So the only way for us to have a chance is to win ours as well.
Bailey, Adam got asked this question yesterday. We spoke about it a bit, but I'm intrigued to hear your thoughts. Were you more or less confident? I guess it's always going to be more confident after a 4-1 win and obviously had City lost, then you're probably talking about them out the title race. But were you significantly more confident about City's title chances after that Villa game on Wednesday?
Yeah, I'd say so overall. I think a lot of people see throughout this season there's been glimpses of City hitting that top gear. There's glimpses of that identity that Adam has spoken about, but we haven't really kind of seen it consistently towards the back end. It's always been in moments. It's always felt like a stop-start. So definitely encouraging to see that kind of reaction and performance after a game against Arsenal where everybody had kind of not lost hope, but was kind of in that kind of middle ground of not knowing what to expect.
It felt timely. I think that's the best way to describe it. Guys, we'll call it a day there. Adam, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bailey, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Listeners, thank you very much. That's the end of another week. We'll see you on Monday, hopefully celebrating yet another Manchester City victory. But until then, it's been a pleasure. We'll see you later. Make sure you're geared up for Man City's end of season running with McDelivery. Great food delivered right to your door. By using McDelivery, you won't miss a moment of City's crucial running, and just like Kevin De Bruyne, they deliver your order exactly where you want it. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. Are you in? At participating restaurants only, 18 and plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.